Hi Sandra, thinking for by others is the topic you selected. It's an intriguing topic because I think it's something which is so problematic and causes so many problems in humanity that I proposed the topic for the simple reason that it needs to be addressed. And the way I like to address it is by saying that there is a implied conflict in this approach of thinking for by others, for the simple reason that it is very much connected to the talk on growing up in humanity, and also it is very much connected to the talk on identity disorders or the problems of creating an identity. And that, of course, is again connected to the problems of identification, which implies and means social integration. And the topic of thinking for by others is like pivotal in that whole approach, because it hinges on this understanding of freedom of choice. So maybe I better start there with the recapitulation of freedom of choice and then go into the growing up in humanity again, and from there again the development of identity with the problems of it, which are the identity diseases and the identity disorders and the problems of disintegration or disidentification due to lack of integrity or disintegrity, and that then brings us to this realization that communication needs to be in balance, and that the balance of communication is very much connected to what we've discussed before, this stupendous work of Bert Verveen. That the feed forward and the feedback loops between the cells are not only the basis of health within our body, but also for peace in society. And then when people start to think for others, or when there is thinking by others, this is where the identity and the integrity is lost, for the simple reason that the balance between the self and the other is no longer there, which is indicative for a conflict with the four fundamental principles of freedom of choice. So let me start with that. The four fundamental principles of freedom of choice are, first, that you have a choice, that there is freedom of choice. Second, if you have a choice, then you must respect the freedom of choice of others. Third, if you choose, then by your choice you create a decision which creates a conviction which creates a conduct. And in that transition from choice to decision to conviction to conduct, there is a shift in consciousness from conscious at the level of choice, subconscious at the level of decision, unconscious at the level of the conviction, and out of conscious for the level of conduct. In that transition from freedom of choice to respect, to responsibility and reliability, which are the four pillars of freedom of choice, we then are also automatically dealing with these four levels of consciousness. And these four levels of consciousness we also actively experience in the social interaction, because that is where we are then dealing with having freedom of choice in ourselves. So our conscious thinking we can then experience in ourselves, and that is where I keep on referring to this model of the point, the line, the plane, and the volume. So if you look at the point representing you, that's where in your consciousness you can operate freedom of choice. when you go to the line, which then represents a relationship, there's somebody else involved, and you have half of that interaction which you can address. The other addresses the other half of the interaction from their side. So you're not in full consciousness of that relationship. You're in a subconscious interaction. And when it becomes more complex, when there are three people, you don't have a line, but you have a triangle, a plane, two-dimensional, then you can have a subconscious relationship to the one individual, you have a subconscious relationship to the other individual, but the relationship between the two people is out of your conscious reach. It's unconscious. It is something between them. Add somebody else to that interaction and you have four people, then immediately you have four points representing that, but you have six lines showing the connectedness between all of them, which means that there are more relationships than there are people, and that put it outside of conscious. So when there is a group interaction, it's out of conscious. And then if you look at the table which can describe this, you would see that one-dimensional is the individual's consciousness. Zero-dimensional is the point, is the individual's consciousness. One-dimensional is the line, is the relationship, which is subconscious. Two-dimensional is the plane, is the group process, the circulation, circle, and the unconscious. And at the fourth level, you have the volume, which is three-dimensional, which is the interaction with, let's say, humanity, and that is out of conscious. Then immediately I can connect that to other items which we have discussed, which is that principle of alienation, when people lose their connectedness into their environment, and they basically have to reconsider how they relate to themselves and to others. And when they fall back on themselves and basically ignore everybody around them, that form of alienation disease is called autism. There is a internal consciousness of the individual, there is a choice which they made, and when you talk with autists, they are aware of that. They often remember why they did and how they did that. It simply requires that you first need to get on their wavelength so that you're no longer excluded, but then you find that there is a fully functional individual there who created the choice to just leave others out of their considerations. With a narcissist, they don't shield off their environment in that way, but they in a way inflict their problem of identification, specifically their alienation in identification in the relationship, and project that on others. So they reflect the others, but they do not self-reflect, and that's the whole narcissistic process or the whole narcissistic protocol. And because they do that at the unconscious, at the subconscious level, they tune into everything around them at the subconscious level, which means that other people are caught out, because in the relationships they assume that there is a balance in this relationship between them and the other, but the other doesn't look at it like that. They in a way have regressed to a previous kind of relationship, like that of a baby in their world. That's also where the concept of entitlement and the narcissistic wronging and the narcissistic distortions in the relationship have become so well known, if you look in the literature that is available in that. And that is where you then see the narcissist from their subconscious manipulates the relationship, because the relationship is subconscious. The same in a equivalent way happens for the psychopath. They work from the unconscious, they work with the group unconscious, so they manipulate the group unconscious still from their alienated perspective, and so they project their alienated state of being, which is often an identification with the trauma which they couldn't resolve and which they got caught up in. And in that way, everybody gets caught up in their unresolved trauma, but the others are not aware of it. First of all, because they don't know that this is somebody who has been severely hurt. Secondly, because they don't know that the interaction is taking place in the unconscious. And thirdly, they are not aware in themselves of how their own unconscious and their own hurt gets triggered by what happens. The sociopath, next level, is basically a psychopath, but not working in groups, but working with everybody, projecting alienation on everybody, so that it's the out of conscious. And in that out of conscious domain, people are then balanced or bounced or echoed or reflected in their unresolved issues and manipulated by that in the out of conscious level. And by not understanding what happens, they cannot resolve it, but the difficulty lies therein that they are not aware that this takes place in the out of conscious. And that is why it is so important to understand that the manipulation which takes place by the narcissist, by the psychopath, by the sociopath, are operating at different levels of consciousness. And that brings it back to that difficulty of, say, the dynamic of identification. If the relationship between two people is not balanced, because somebody is actually at the subconscious level, or at the unconscious level, or at the out of conscious level, interfering with that process dynamic by essentially discharging emotions in those communication spaces, then it becomes very difficult to navigate that interaction. And the metaphor which I use for that is that of the ship. When you're sailing a ship with sails, so literally a sailing boat, then the wind blows from one direction, and then as a sailor you know that you can set a course and you can take the wind into account, and if the wind comes from another direction you set the sails to accommodate for that accordingly. And in that way, in a conversation with other people, you connect up to their inspiration, set your sails accordingly, and indicate which direction you want to sail in the conversation, where you want to go in the unfolding of the thoughts. And when they move from one topic to the other, it is as if the wind changes direction. You set the sails, but you know how to then keep on going forward to the goal of the conversation. And if necessary, if you have a headwind, so to say, and find that there is no direction that you can sail from where the wind is blowing, then you go as close to that direction as you can, and then when necessary you tack, you put the ship on the other bow and put the sail on the other side, and again try to get as close as possible to the goal until you reach the goal and the conversation can conclude to the satisfaction of all people involved. So when at the conversation level this is a possibility to get ahead in the what's going on, then at the deeper level, in interacting with the narcissist, the psychopath and the sociopath, they don't work at that level of, say, the spoken word. They work instead with a different level of an implied meaning, often a distorted meaning, often a meaning from their side perceived as very hurtful, because even if they don't remember, there's something very traumatic which drove them in their experience of their alienation, their narcissistic, psychopathic, sociopathic conduct. So they try to sail the ship as best that they can, but they have a sinking ship, so most of the time they're trying to throw out the water and slosh it in your face, so to say. But it means that when you are interacting with them, it is never about the conversation which seems to be taking place. Because for them, it's all about the undercurrent in the water. They are not at the cognitive level of reason, but they are at the subcognitive level of emotional charges and discharges. So for them, it is a series of currents and undercurrents by which they navigate. So when you think that you're sailing the boat with your sails navigating the wind of what they say, actually what is going on is determined by a current of the water which goes in a totally different direction. So you might think that you're sailing forward because with respect to the wind that's what's going on, but at the emotional level you're drifting sideways or backwards or rushed forward in a way that you cannot predict, for the simple reason that you have not understood the emotional charges which are going on, because that's not part of our education. For the sociopath, there is something deeper going on. It's not just that there is a current like a Gulf Stream which is putting your boat on a drift, putting the conversation in a totally different direction than where you think it is going, but it is actually as if there is an underwater earthquake with a tsunami coming, which will just throw your ship in a totally different direction, regardless of where the undercurrent of the ocean might be at that time. And because that is in the out-of-conscious domain, people are not aware of it. And while I have been exploring these difficulties of interacting with the narcissist, the psychopath, and the sociopath, I was very much helped by and my experience as a sailing instructor and my experience as a wave mechanics engineer, so that I could at least come up with a metaphor which helps untangle these different levels of involvement in the communication. Of course, that doesn't help yet to be able to navigate this, because if you're dealing with the wind, including the jet streams, that's very different from dealing with the emotional current, including their Gulf Streams, and that is very different again from these deep tsunamis, which are these earthquakes at the foundation of our belief systems. Yet that is what we need to address, understand, and negotiate with when we are interacting with people who have been alienated, because they got disrupted in their experience of reality, in their reality realization, so they can't compute what's going on, and they had to fall back onto a different level of understanding what goes on around them. And for them, the only compass that they could go by is their internal compass, and they're not aware that they've caught up in their own little hell and that their compass is just madly spinning around because they're stuck right in the middle of that cyclone, of that unresolved traumatic experience which has become to dominate their life. It's one of their blind spots, and we've talked about blind spots before at some other time. So with all of this in place, I can then shift the perspective, because with this metaphor of sailing with the wind, the current, and the tsunamis, we can then link that to the psychosomatic mechanism, the psychosomatic engine, because that is where we can see that what we are experiencing in the communication with others is always based on the cell communication within us. And as discussed in that topic on the psychosomatic engine, within us we have the cells communicating by electromagnetic radio information fields. They use that information to produce specific molecules. They then communicate using those specific molecules, and they also affirm that communication by producing yet other molecules by which they can then produce the body materials, the biomaterials, by which they can have a specific relationship to each other. And the alchemists already understood that, so they knew that there were, say, a fixed relationship between the cells, as cells in bones, for example. They knew that there were fluid relationships in the way that people can have the blood circulating in their vessels, in their blood vessels in the body, and in the lymph duct. There is also a relationship interaction which are much more dynamic, like the gas exchange with the environment. And there is a much deeper interchange with the environment yet, which is that in the electromagnetic quantum information field. It's immaterial, as Tetronics carefully describes, but yet it is pervasive in everything, as Tetronics puts it. Only the Tetronic quantum field can create and move matter. So in our body we can then have the understanding at these four levels, which the alchemists call earth, water, air and fire, which we would call matter, molecules, atoms and the quantum field, which in system theory is called the state, the process, the transformation and integration, that in our body we can then see in a much more tangible form what happens in these communication between people, because we see them as the communication between cells within us. And in that cell communication, thanks to the work of Bert Verveen and Hans Selye, we can realize that it is all about maintenance of unity between units. That is all based on the way the whole body unfolded from the first cell, and how in the first cell dynamic the one cell from the material to the molecular to the atomic into the phase field has this vortex contraction by which the materials dissolve, the molecules evaporate, the atoms discharge, and then out comes this Cooper pair, this doubled cell, which has this feed-forward feedback loop between them, which then is the foundation of health. But it is also the foundation for cell communication, and it is also the foundation for the communication between people. That is where we can switch to the next perspective, because we then need to understand how it comes that people in their development can have these difficulties in communication, that people such as the psychopath, the narcissist and the sociopath take over the conversation and derail the conversation, as a result of which people get thrown back on themselves, and that's also something that severely hinders the development of society. And that's where we can then connect it back to something which was discussed, at the development of humans in humanity. In the same way as the cell replicates and forms two cells, and then going on forms the whole body, likewise in our experience in life we develop from being centered on ourselves as a baby to developing in our environment by stepping out into the environment as a child, then learning to step outside of our environment into another environment as adolescent, and then basically ending up being able to go to any territory, any environment as an adult. Because as an adult, we know that we need to change internally when we change territory externally. It's not just when we go to a different culture that they will have different language, different habits, different rituals, different protocols, but also when we go to a different climate, we need to have a different habit called a dress. We need to have a different conversation or communication, which is then with the environment in the term of different housing and different transport vehicles. And then we can learn to navigate the world by switching from one housing type to the other, from one vehicle type to the other, so that basically we can travel all over the world. And that transition from baby to child to adolescent to adult is something which we have ingrained right within us, because as humans, with our capacity to have a memory map of the environment, by which we can design the tools and the techniques and the language in society by which we can actually freely move around, that freedom to move as an adult on the planet is based on, say, this adolescent capacity to discern between territories, and to realize that when we go from one territory to the other, we must make a switch. And that's something which is built in us at the animal level already. So at the animal level, we know how to work within a territory. We know where to sleep, where to go out to find food, where to go out and digest the food, and to also where to go to eliminate the food. So those cycles of the season are then part of the life cycle in our environment. And the animal can do that because the animal simply has internalized the season which exists around the plant. So the animal falls back on the plant just as the human falls back on the animal. And thus, as a human, we fall back on the animal and therefore on the plant as the vegetative system. And by the vegetative system, we are then able to connect, say, the earth and the water underneath with the air and the light overhead. And so that we can connect the two, but also interchange the two, in the same way that the plants are able to have the microbes at the roots transform the soil into a soup which they can eat and feed to the leaves and feed to the plants, and as perfume feed into the environment. Also as fruit. And then in the other sense, have the light come in, go down through the branches, through the trunk, through the roots to the microbes, which use that to create that soup which feeds the plant. So we have that capacity within us too, and that capacity is there because this tree unfolded from the seed, and that seed or the cell is then originated, as Lynn Margulis puts it, from the eukaryote cell, which is essentially a fusion of four types of microbes, the earth, water, air, and fire microbes, called hydrobic, anaerobic, hydrobic, aerobic, and photosynthesizing microbes. And as Gaston Nasson showed, the microbes, the virus, the fungus, and the spores are actually one circle, one cycle. So that's where we then see that the foundation of our being lies in that interaction between the spores, the fungus, the virus, and the microbe, which fully reflects what Tetradonix describes as the foundation of the creation of the universe in the quantum, in interaction with the photon, in interaction with the W boson, in interaction with the tetrion, in creating the whole manifest reality that we are in. I needed to put all of this together, leading us from growing up into the environment back to tetrionics, because in my mind we cannot have this notion of having models of understanding which are not universal. If a model is universal, it must describe the universe, it also must describe us. So it needs to be scientific and medical at the same time, it needs to be somatic and psychological at the same time. And it is that understanding which you can then use to come back to the topic of this exploration, which is thinking for and by others. Because with everything that I've put in place now, I have enough of a platform to address this situation of thinking for by and by others in terms of the development of the human, from a baby to a child to an adolescent to an adult, because we need to understand what happens there to be able to understand what happens when this goes wrong, when people need to fall back from an adult to an adolescent, or from an adolescent to a child, or from a child back to a baby, and why that happens. And in order to see how relevant that is, we need to be able to compare that to what happens in the body. That's why I needed to pull the body and the physiology and cell communication into the story. Because we can no longer discuss changes in relationship between people, including the topic of thinking for and by others, if we do not see how the relationship between people is directly connected to the relationship between the cells within us. Because that's where we then can see that if something goes wrong in the relationship between people, that on the one hand can cause diseases within those people, but on the other hand it can cause diseases within humanity. And that is why for me this topic of thinking for and by others is so important, because it is pivotal, it is crucial. It is about the autonomy of people in society and the need for society to be based on the autonomy of the individual. And this topic of thinking for and by others is so important, specifically because in many societies this autonomy is not certain, it is not assured, it is not put in place. In fact, the contrary is most often the case, that there are very many mechanisms, social mechanisms, communicational mechanisms, which have been put in place as a result of which people cannot be autonomous and cannot be sovereign. So there is a whole conditioning of dependency which has been inflicted on humanity, caused by this pivotal lack of discernment of the relationship between the individual and the group, and the lack of respect for understanding that the group is composed of individuals. So there's a few examples which I'd like to mention to just illustrate how wrong these things have gone. One of them, of course, is the legal and unlawful and unjust formulation that a corporation would be an individual entity. A corporation is not an individual. A corporation is a group of people, and as a group of people, by definition, it's the third order dynamic. It's a relationship of people. And individuals are conscious, relationships are subconscious, relationship of relationships are unconscious. And that means that a group of people, a corporation, a church, a nation, whatever group it is always unconscious and always irresponsible. So that is one example where we can see that in society a distortion has been created by pretending that a group is an individual, and in that sense also pretending that a group could tell you as an individual what to do. But a group telling you what to do is basically a gang, a mob, a mafia, a crime syndicate, because they are not respecting the principles of freedom of choice. Every individual in that group should respect the freedom of choice of themselves, of the other, and they should be responsible for the sequence of consequences of their actions and decisions, and they should be reliable so that at the moment that they change a decision that they took, they renegotiate with everybody who was inflicted by that original decision that was taken. Another example of the distortion of humanity and society is that of representation politics. Representation politics is sort of halfway between a mob mindset and the individual, which needs to be respected, because in representation politics there is this notion that an individual can represent a group, or that an individual can represent another individual, and both of them are wrong. And both of them are examples of thinking for and by others. I will just leave it with these two examples, because now I have brought the conversation to the pivotal topic, why thinking for and by others is so potentially toxic, and how thinking for and by others has distorted humanity. Because in this whole approach of thinking for and by others, the human development is not respected. I need to elaborate that a bit, because in the growing up as a human in humanity, and normally the individual would be cradled as a baby and cared for by the parents, for the simple reason that when a human is born, they are born prematurely. There is no more room in the womb, as a result of which the womb contracts and expels the baby with this vortex motion, the rotation by which the inside is turned into the outside, quite literally a vortex inversion dynamic. But once the baby is outside the womb, functionally it still is inside of the womb, because it is totally dependent for all of its needs on the environment. And so, as I mentioned elsewhere already, there are four communication cries that the baby has. One of them is the need for food, the other is the need for hygiene, the elimination of the piss and shit, the changing of the diaper. Another one is the need for attention and affection, and the other is the need for sleep. So it is unavoidable that the parents need to be thinking for the baby. They must do that for the simple reason that the baby cannot survive without it. So the parents actually learn to look at the needs of the baby and need to be able to distinguish and discern that from their own needs. That means that the parents must have gone through their stages of development, from baby to child to the adolescent to the adult. The next stage of development is that of the child, where the individual realizes that there is a difference between, say, mommy and daddy. That in interacting with the one, it is different than interacting with the other. In the baby phase, the primordial needs are those of the body, survival, food, shelter. But at the childhood level, there is a need for social interaction and social acceptance, peace and harmony as well. And that is where the child then learns that people are different, that in interaction with different people, a different approach is required, and they learn to not only walk in the world, but also take different step in their mind and walk the one way and the other way. They learn to navigate. And it's intriguing and interesting that, as Hank Coy says, have these four neurotransmitters in our brain, had dopamine, acetylcholine, GABA, and serotonin. They are like four gears. So dopamine is as when the car is parked and you need to put it on the road or the other way around. Acetylcholine, second gear, is when you're on the road and you need to merge in the traffic or maneuver out of the traffic, the athletic kind of agility. The third gear is when you are in the travel and you need to change direction at the crossings and need to have an overview, a map in the mind of where you're going, which is where the GABA then actually does that kind of administration or coordination. And at the fourth level, at the serotonin, is when you're out on the roads happily traveling. And in that same way, we have these four gears in developing from baby to child to adolescent to adult. I've already talked about the baby needing to have that total care by the parents in the environment. And the second gear, the baby being learning how to take care of our own things, and the parents needing to stop caring for that. But they still need to care for the environment and for the safety in the environment. It is only in adolescence, when the child learns to step out of the environment and discovers that there are different environments, discover that there are different kinds of people, which require different kind of interaction, just like different territories require different kind of interaction, which is where, as in the GABA neurotransmitter, there needs to be a kind of understanding of different types of relationship and how we can negotiate them and negotiate with them. And that's also where then autonomy comes in. And autonomy means that the adolescent then learns to decide for themselves. It is no longer the parent that takes over. It's no longer the parent that is controlled. It's no longer the parent that conditions the conditions. And in a normal, natural society, that is where the adolescent then steps out into the world and develops their own individuality, their own integrity in identity, and their own integration within environment. And just as the baby learns to walk by falling and getting up, just as the child learns to talk by falling and getting up, likewise the adolescent steps out in the world by falling and getting up, making mistakes and learning from them. But there is that pivotal point in adolescence where the adolescent turns into an adult and knows that it can deal with the situation of life, and the adolescent becomes a sovereign, determining their own life, determining how they relate to others, determining where they live, determining with whom they live, and also realizing that everybody has their own life, has their own sovereignty, cares for their own autonomy, and in that way cares for their own realization of reality. But it means that in the development from baby to child to adolescent to adult, the parents and the environment need to totally change. Because just like the baby was inside the womb on the one moment and outside of the womb on the other, the child is inside of the crib, then inside of the house, then inside of the neighborhood, and then outside in the world. There is this continual transition, this crossing of a boundary from one level of development to the other, but also a transition in a growth in autonomy and independence. The baby is totally dependent, the child is self-standing, the adolescent is autonomous, and the adult is sovereign. But that means that for the baby, the parents need to think and act for the baby. For the child, the child can act for itself in part, but the parents will still be thinking for the child for a larger extent. Then in puberty, the child learns to think for itself and act for itself. And as an adolescent, the parents then need to stop doing that. A lot of the adolescent conflicts are arising because parents do not stop thinking or acting on behalf of the other. And in most society, this has been institutionalized. That instead of the parent telling the child or the adolescent what to do, laws have been created. And instead of the adolescent thinking for itself, a money system has been imposed with, say, a set of jobs that people should choose to do to be paid to be able to survive. So in an incomplete or unhealthy society, the thinking for others and the thinking by others has been institutionalized by a legal system, by a financial system. And as a result, the same happens in those societies as what happens in the interaction between individuals when the other individual has become alienated, is a narcissist, a psychopath, or a sociopath, and is trying to manipulate the other. And as I mentioned before, when dealing with the psychopath, when dealing with the narcissist, people are confronted with their subconscious unresolved issues because the narcissist amplifies them, reflects them. When dealing with a psychopath, they need to be dealing with their unconscious unresolved issue because that's where the psychopath manipulates them. In dealing with the sociopath, they need to become aware of their out-of-conscious unresolved issues, which are also the collective issues, which are the collective beliefs and the collective superstitions. And if people cannot resolve that and do not resolve that, they will be manipulated by their superstition. They will be manipulated by the emotional drive imposed by others. They will be manipulated by their own blind spot because the others know how to detect it. So what I talked about in that description of the narcissist, the psychopath, and the sociopath comes back in the story, but now as the system of laws and finances and politics and religions, in which people as individuals, as groups, and as societies got stuck in unresolved issues at a larger scale, in unresolved beliefs. And when people succumb to beliefs, they stop thinking. And they accept the belief and then they stop thinking, and that means that others are thinking for them. And the same in patterns of behavior, like social conduct. If people step into a legal system and say, well, this is how it needs to be, then their behavior, their conduct is determined by others, and they become irresponsible because they might do things lawfully or legally correct, but they might be totally hurtful or harmful to others. And of course, a lot of the criminality which takes place nowadays is when corporations say that they abide by the laws but kill billions of species and poison the planet. Or when politicians say that they are doing the right thing, but actually they are corrupt, taking bribes or from corporations and acting on the behalf of the corporations against the populations. There's so many examples where the thinking for and by others becomes very pivotal and very crucial, and that is why I bring it down to this simple topic that if there is an instance of thinking for and by others, that means that the one thinking for by others does not respect the freedom of choice of the others. And disrespect of freedom of choice, denial of freedom of choice, is a crime against life. So in thinking for and by others as the topic, we are also talking about the fine line between caring for others as is necessary for a baby and is in part helpful for a child and might in some cases be advised for an adolescent, but certainly should not be done for adults. And by introducing the topic of thinking for others, we can then look at all those points where freedom of choice is being negated, denied, suppressed, or distorted. Those are all the points where freedom of choice, respect, responsibility, and reliability are accounted for, or not respected. And thus we can look for everything in society and also everywhere in a relationship where the relationship becomes distorted, manipulated, because people are thinking for others, or people let the thinking be done by others. And nowadays there is a very stark example of this kind of distortion. We have seen it in the churches with their Inquisition. We are seeing it in the mass media with their deceptions. And we are seeing it in the mass media with their and the advertising systems, which are based on essentially a lie. You're telling something about something which is not true, because if the product was good, it would sell itself. And also in the advertising industry, we can see the associated corresponding lie that laws have been made as a result of which advertising is now part of a mega spy program. And at the core of it, we can see that this deception is everywhere there where in politics people think for others. And as a result, laws have been made to allow bankers to take possession of things which they could never own. You cannot own the earth, so you cannot own part of the earth. So there are so many examples where superstition has been put in place of a reality. And the superstition can only exist because people are led to believe something the other says which is not correct. And the clearest example where we can see that is in the narcissist, the psychopath, and the sociopath, the habitual liars, and also the systems of the habitual lie in society, such as all of the groups where there are representatives who say they can think for others, and as a result have become misrepresentatives, because of course they cannot think for others. There is a need for people to realize that no other can represent them, that the only form of politics which is helpful and healthy is that of self-representation. And likewise, the only form of collaboration is that in which people represent themselves and co-own whatever they do, which is called a cooperative and not a corporation. And in the same way that everybody always has freedom of thought, freedom of expression, and that there are no institutions which tell other people directly or indirectly how they should think or what they should think, as is still seen in some cult-like religions. There are many other cults. The cult of banking is another example. People have become so used to let others think for them that they allow other people to make their laws, that they allow other people to make their money, and by the combination of the two, allow others to determine their lives. That is why this topic of thinking for and by others is so important, because once you see that at the onset of puberty, people need to discern their own value, they need to establish their own meaning, that means that they need to know how to produce their own law, they need to know how to produce their own money, and as a result can then negotiate with others about the meanings and the values that together they can share. And that means that they end up with a balanced communication, a balanced conversation, in which they each contribute their own uniqueness, and together can discover that they complement and complete each other, and that thinking for and by others becomes thinking with others, and that the thinking as a consequence unfolds, that people realize that what they can think about is limited, and what others can think about is limited as well, but when you think about these things together, you can come to a larger form of understanding, and that the individual conscious thinking becomes a shared subconscious larger thinking with others, that in groups that can even become a much larger unconscious shared understanding, and that out of that it becomes possible to have some kind of thinking or intuition about everything that we cannot think about, but which yet determines our life and our experience of life individually and together. So that's why I would like to bring this recording to a close, by simply saying that everything that I needed to bring up in this story is essential as a scaffolding to help understand that we cannot think for others. We must respect that others have their own life, their own body, their own life decisions to take, their own thinking to do, and that in the development of our own thinking we can then discover that there is a shared thinking which we have, which is similar to that of others, but it is not the same. Uniformity is never a solution, because uniformity would bring us back to single cellular organisms. We need to have that understanding that we are multicellular organisms. We have different cells, different organs. Likewise, we have different realizations, different thoughts, and every human is a cell in the body of humanity, and every group, every society, every culture is a different organ in the body of humanity, and they all need to have their own unique, distinct, separate, individual thoughts, life experience, life realization, and they cannot determine the other. They can express what they know, and the others can work with that, but determining what the other knows or determining what the others can do, thinking for other, is toxic because it limits the potential of the individuals, it limits the potential of the society, it limits the potential of humanity. And that means that any time somebody is trying to manipulate somebody else, and one of the distortions which is very much practiced next to the churches and the advertising industry and all that is the so-called seduction techniques, where people are taught or trained to essentially go into a narcissistic behavior and try to determine and manipulate the thoughts of others, thereby disrespecting the thoughts of others, trying to take control over others instead of trying to coordinate a consciousness with others. And that is where it would be very helpful when people realize when thinking for others and when thinking by others is taking place, so that in themselves they are aware that somebody is trying to think for them, but as the other is not apparent, as there can be no other authority than themselves, there is no higher authority, because people cannot represent somebody else, than the hierarchy which is prevalent in so many societies is replaced by democracy. Hierarchy is essentially somebody telling somebody else what to do. Democracy is essentially people with each other telling each other what they intend to do. So instead of a vertical relationship, it becomes a horizontal relationship. And by having that horizontal relationship, people can then develop their own identity and integrity. And once they have that, once they stop thinking for others, and once they disallow the thinking by others, then of course, when they have a baby, they are very clear that they cannot think for the other, cannot act for the other, but they do know what the other needs, and they do know that the other cannot provide them themselves, and that they then help out and step in that place and do that so that the other can develop their own self-standing, autonomous, sovereign being, and as a result the other can learn to develop their own thoughts, develop their own life, develop their own reality in their body, and as a result develop and experience their own integrity, their identity, and thereby have their integration into the body of humanity, as a result of which their uniqueness unfolds together with the uniqueness of all those others into something which I can best describe as a holographic multiplication, that suddenly something which was limited and local is experienced as so much larger and so much more meaningful. And that brings it to the end. In the title of this presentation, the concept of thinking for and by others is the key to understand when the thinking for and by others needs to stop, that there needs to be a general understanding that thinking for and by others is not a healthy situation, and that once people know that, then the thinking with others can develop so much more potential instead, that it really enhances the quality of being a human and the quality of humanity as well. Thank you.